Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you every week to discuss self-care and integrated health. In 1915, Dr. Goldberger discovered that pellagra was a disease of malnutrition and cured it with the addition of tryptophan, an amino acid, and vitamin B3, one of the vitamin B's, niacin. Since his discovery, flour is now enriched with niacin, and pellagra is all but gone. From 1925 to 1940, vitamins were being isolated, discovered, and their role in treating and preventing illness enthusiastically studied until the birth of pharmaceuticals. Now, research continues now, although it has less attention paid to it compared to the more economically driven drug research, which we read about and see in commercials all the time. Micronutrient supplementation is the subject of today's show. The RDI, used to be the RDA, now it's the RDI. It might be important to realize that this kind of a made-up number. When you really dig around in the research and talk to people who know, who were there, who had some relationship to what went on and stuff. This was a number that was kind of made up, but it was based on controlling or preventing diseases of deficiency, deficiency diseases like pellagra or scurvy. Now, so what they've done is that they came up with a number which would be just a little more than what it would take to have you not have a deficiency. The RDI is about what you're seeing in most multiple vitamins. You'll see a percentage of the RDI. But it's very important to realize that the RDI is a minuscule amount of vitamins and only controlling for and preventing deficiency diseases is really not good enough. The reason it's not good enough is that deficiency diseases are extremely serious. And yes, it's good to prevent them, but using a dose which is just barely more than will prevent you from having bleeding gums and almost going into a coma from lack of vitamin C, for instance, is not enough for people to enjoy robust health. We're talking survival. We're not talking thriving. It also is important to understand that the RDI assumes that everybody needs the same dose of vitamin. This is so incorrect. It's astonishing how far from what might be considered normal people are. Anomalies are really normal. People are very individual. These doses are not considering people's inherited traits from their families, their genetics, their stress levels, their lifestyles. None of these things are taken into consideration. People metabolize vitamins in a very different way because you can't control for exactly how they're eating either. You don't know what other nutrients they're getting in what kinds of ratios. The other thing is that the effects of micronutrient supplementations, vitamin minerals, is very dose dependent. If you don't give someone as much as they need, you won't see a benefit. And this is, I believe, the problem with so many of the studies that we're seeing from time to time is that they don't control for these individual factors and needs or for stress, illness, and other things, but they're also not using enough of a vitamin to get a healing effect or a prevention effect. A good example, again, is vitamin C, that if you take just enough to prevent scurvy, and then you try to use it for a situation where pathology is already taking hold, where there's inflammation or a chronic kind of heart problem or hypertension, you won't see a resolution of these, or cancer. You won't see any kind of resolution using a dose that is merely intended to be a prevention for getting scurvy. This is not going to be a pharmacologic dose, so to speak. An example of the kind of news that pops up, the kinds of studies that get attention that are like this, is a recent study that was conducted in a Scandinavian country, in Sweden, on vitamin A. what they showed was they were two different tests. One of them looked in vitro in a test tube at the effects of vitamin A, and they used a source of vitamin A that is a derivative source of vitamin A. It's derivative and it's isolated from its natural state, and it's in a petri dish. In the other study, what they did was they measured the levels of the metabolite of vitamin A in men, and it was a fairly large study. And they followed these people, and they noticed that there was a marked loss of bone density in the people who had the highest levels of vitamin A. Now, it's very important, when you first see that, I mean, I must say that even very smart people that I know who work in nutritional field have been alarmed by this study. But I think if you think about it for a moment, that you're looking at a cross-section of men in Sweden where there's no sunlight, and vitamin D levels are very low. They didn't test their vitamin D levels. I think most people who know anything about nutrition know that vitamin A and vitamin D have a relationship to each other and can test each other. They're present together in things like fish oil. Vitamin A and D appear naturally together. So what are we really saying here? Do we know whether these people had sufficient amounts of vitamin D metabolite, 25-hydroxy-D? Do we know that they had a sufficient amount of that to balance the A? Do we know what these people were eating? Do we know anything about, what might be causing them to have robust levels of vitamin A, and what is the relationship between the vitamin A and other things in their diet and supplementation? So it's to me an incomplete study. When you look at a single nutrient, it's very important to know about the others that affect its action. And in this case, vitamin D and calcium was not measured. So I'm sorry, I don't take these kinds of studies terribly seriously. What I think it does bring up is the fact that vitamins and minerals and micronutrients work in relationship to each other, and certainly the ratio between them needs to be respected and attention needs to be paid. That said, individuals will need and require differing amounts of these and will have differing effects taking vitamins than others. In fact, this study, I don't think even had people, it's not even clear that these people were supplementing with vitamin A or not. It's not clear, or what kind. Well, let's roll it back for a moment. What exactly do I mean by micronutrients? What I mean are vitamins, both water and fat-soluble vitamins, minerals, which are actually natural occurring metals, fatty acids, and many times what we talk about in terms of supplementation are the essential fatty acids, the ones that we have to get from food that we don't make in our bodies, amino acids, and potentially you could say probiotics, like acidophilus might be considered a micronutrient. Macronutrients are proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. So food is macronutrients, larger nutrients, micronutrients being the things that are available in food, and some of them are also produced within our bodies, some of the micronutrients. They're antioxidants. They're building blocks and have effects throughout the body down to our cells and cell membranes. They facilitate communication between cells. They rebuild tissues. They contribute by nourishing and protecting every cell in your body. And in many cases, they are the raw materials that actually make up tissue, bones, and hair. So I want to go over some principles some principles about vitamins and supplements. I want to do this mostly to demystify some of this stuff for you and give you some, what I mean by principles, are some ways to think about them, some kind of a template to put over information that you get about vitamins and supplements, rather than going in depth on what specific ailments are treating, you know, what sort of things will make certain things better. What I'll do is follow up next week with a show that talks about specific kinds of pathologies that are responsive to vitamin therapy, although my opinion is everything that happens to us is responsive to vitamin therapy. But anyway, some principles that I think are very important is, one is to explain a little bit about what antioxidants are, again. we heard, those of you who were listening a couple of weeks ago heard a show on vitamin C, and what we learned is that antioxidants like vitamin C and vitamin A and vitamin E, these are substances that donate electrons to protect our cells from damage from free radicals. Free radicals are produced by pollution, toxins in the environment, infections, and any form of stress will increase inflammation. Anything like that will increase the amount of free radicals. And free radicals, the best description I ever had of them is that they're like little Pac-Man, that, for those of you who are old enough to remember Pac-Man, little things that run around and eat and grab electrons off of our cells and molecules and damage our cells as a result. What happens with antioxidants is that they will donate electrons back, and that protects the cell from damage. But they really need to be together. They really want to be taken together. This doesn't mean that you have to take them all exactly at the same time during the day, but within a day or within the week, your blood level or nutrient level of these substances all needs to be, kind of at an equal level or at a good level, because when a antioxidant donates an electron, it needs to borrow one from someone else, and this goes in a kind of round robin. The advantage to vitamin C in particular, the thing that makes it unique, is that vitamin C will just keep donating, and one of the reasons why studies on low-level intakes of vitamin C, where you see that vitamin C doesn't work if you take 500 milligrams a day only. It looks like it doesn't do anything. In fact, maybe it's even pro-oxidative. It's that way, and if you really think about it, based on what I just told you, it makes perfect sense. What happens is that antioxidants, including vitamin C, are becoming somewhat damaged by donating their electrons. That doesn't mean that they themselves are becoming dangerous to our cells, but it does mean that they need repletion from other antioxidants. And since vitamin C isn't made in our bodies anymore, taking it throughout the day so that we replete the vitamin C as it gives up its electrons, it keeps getting repleted. That protects you from having any kind of oxidative damage from the process of antioxidants giving up their electrons. Again, let me repeat what I just said. What we're really saying here is not that antioxidants are pro-oxidative. What we're saying is that if they're taken in really small doses, or if your diet is only supplying a very small amount of antioxidants and they're not repleted throughout the day, then you run the risk of not getting the protective effects that antioxidants have to offer. They themselves need constantly to be repleted, and they need to be in balance with each other, because they will protect each other from further oxidation, and they will protect other fatty acids that you take into your body that protect your cells as well from oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is a natural process. We breathe oxygen, and we use oxygen to fuel everything that goes on in our bodies, and there's a certain amount of rusting and aging and free radical production even in that process. All of this made worse, again, in the face of inflammation and illness and stress and pollution and metals and all the things that we have going on in our modern worlds that put stress on our bodies. So again, the principle here is that antioxidants donate electrons, and they need to be in a robust amount in your body, and they need to be taken together. You don't take vitamin E only. You know, that's the only vitamin you take for the day. You don't do that. You take vitamin A, you take vitamin E, and you take vitamin C. Those are your main antioxidants, and then there are some new antioxidants like alpha-lipoic acid and CoQ10 and things that are made from bioflavonoids and various things, too, that help as well. But all of them, you want to give yourself as many of these lifesavers as you can floating in the water for any incident that comes up. You want a lot of lifesavers floating around on the top of the water there, not just one that gets used instantly. Vitamin C is one of the only antioxidants that can be taken all by itself. You can just take vitamin C. You don't have to take any other vitamin but vitamin C and without it being dangerous, is what I'm saying. Dangerous, I say advisedly, because it isn't really dangerous to take vitamin E alone. It just isn't very effective, and it won't do its job alone. But Vitamin C, if somebody isn't going to take anything else, taking vitamin C will make a difference and it will still work, especially if it's taken often enough during the day with a high enough dose so that it can continue to do its work donating electrons and getting electrons from the next dose. Supplements, these are everything except amino acids. Supplements should always be taken with meals. In fact, research has indicated all along that they're not well absorbed unless they're in the presence of food, of the coenzymes and cofactors in food. So amino acids are different because amino acids are the building blocks of protein. So if you want to use an amino acid to get a protective, specific neurotransmitter effect, amino acids communicate very effectively with our brain cells all over our bodies and our stomach and everything. They're neurotransmitters like hormones, amino acids. They're also the building blocks of protein. And so if you're taking, for instance, L-carnitine to increase your fat-burning capacity, to increase your cognitive ability and to protect your heart, all of which individual doses of increasing the amount of L-carnitine will do. You want to take it either half an hour before a meal or between meals, so it doesn't compete with the amino acids in your food. It doesn't mean that you won't get any effect from it. It means that you will get a less acute effect from the amino acid. The pharmacologic effect of it is when you take it alone. So if it's got to compete with the food in your meal, it's not going to do as well. On the other hand, all the other vitamins like to be taken with food. I suppose another small exception would be probiotics, which sometimes will put a food source for the cultures, probiotics or cultures, in the product, although many of these products are made without that, and you take those with food as well. I just want to let you know that this is Lena Berman. I'm Your Own Health and Fitness, and I'm doing a show alone today with some basic principles and things to think about when you're thinking about the issue of micronutrient supplementation, that is, supplementation with vitamins, minerals, essential fatty acids, probiotics, and things like that. Another thing to remember is that while it's true that all vitamins have a relationship to each other. They can test each other. They push against each other. They sometimes donate electrons to each other. They all have a relationship and will affect the levels of each other when they're in a milieu in your body. Minerals particularly work in concert and can test each other very markedly. And also, the amount of minerals that you take is far more critical, in my mind, this is my opinion, than the amount of vitamins. The reason is that minerals are metals. They aren't necessarily toxic metals, but some of them can be if they appear in high enough amounts. So people need to be more careful about the upper limits of what you can take with a mineral, more so than you would with something like vitamin E. This, again, is not to say that there are reports everywhere of people keeling over from taking too much calcium, but what we do know is, for instance, in the case of calcium, which is contested by magnesium and also really likes to have manganese and boron on board to help it do its work, among other things, calcium is a vasoconstrictor. It causes vasoconstriction, so it's your veins tend to be more constricted with calcium, and magnesium is a vasodilator. So magnesium is a natural calcium blocker. Now, calcium is kind of ubiquitous in American diet because people do a lot of milk products, which has more calcium than magnesium in it, and very few people take magnesium. They take very small amounts in their vitamins, and they always take more calcium than magnesium, usually in their pills, unless they're paying attention to that. And calcium in high enough doses has a nasty habit of sort of depositing itself in funny places in your body. It is controlled by the intake of magnesium, but even so, I think that people are confused about how much calcium they need, and they tend to overdose on calcium. You probably really realistically, most people don't need more than about 500 to 800 milligrams of calcium a day. And if you're taking it in from food sources, if you have high calcium in your diet, probably don't even need that much. And magnesium, you may find you can even take equal doses. Some people even need more magnesium. Magnesium will give you a loose bowel if you're taking more than you need. So it's not going to hurt you. You just will get the runs, and you'll know that's too much magnesium. The other minerals that work that way are another one that's very common that you can think of very easily. It's an easy thing to understand is the relationship between potassium and sodium, which kind of really control the pump, which controls the fluid volume in your cells. So if you're eating salt in your diet and you're not getting sufficient amounts of potassium in your diet, for instance, an example might be if you're a vegetarian who eats very large amounts of sort of processed vegetarian foods. You buy a lot of Boco burgers and you eat a lot of pickles and you do a lot of this and that, and you're getting a fair amount of sodium in your diet and you're not mainlining bananas. You may find that you will get sodium buildup. You'll have too much sodium, and you may experience some edema, even maybe, God forbid, some hypertension. This is true of anybody that consumes too much sodium chloride and not enough potassium. Now, potassium can be supplemented. It's also for people who do eat meat, red meat is very high in all of these minerals, and particularly in potassium. In fact, meat eaters tend to crave salt because they're getting so much potassium from the meat. Again, these are diets where people are eating natural, not industrial farmed animals. These are organic or as close to organically raised animals as possible, so they're not getting a lot of horrible chemicals and hormones and things. But I'm not saying that people have to be meat eaters. I'm saying that you have to. It's a good idea to pay attention to the balance between sodium and potassium, and the balance between all your other minerals. So if you're consuming too much sodium, take some extra potassium. You may find that symptoms like hypertension and edema may reduce. Copper and zinc is another thing, although oddly many people are very high in copper, and it isn't just people who are high in estrogen. There are people who for a variety of reasons, autistic people, there's a lot of people who are just naturally high in copper and don't have enough zinc on board. Sometimes you can tell that somebody's deficient in zinc because they lose their sense of taste and smell. That's usually a zinc deficiency, so you see it a lot in anorexia and people like that. But very common for people to end up taking too much copper or getting too much copper from their copper pipes in their buildings in the water and not getting sufficient zinc. So they press against each other. Additionally, on rare occasions, somebody will be overdosed on zinc and not taking any copper, and the zinc isn't well absorbed. So you have to, it's kind of a back and forth. Some of it can be intuitive, and some of it needs to be tested. Zinc and calcium affect each other. If you take just scads of zinc, you might lower your calcium, or scads of calcium will lower your zinc, I think. Selenium is an interesting mineral. There's been lots of scare stories about people finding out there's lots of selenium in their soil, and oh my God, it's toxic, and yada yada. Again, this is not a common experience, and selenium is enormously important because it chelates toxic metals out of your body. It helps to reduce toxic metal contamination in your body, and it's also an antioxidant, which is very rare for minerals to function that way. Now, we've been talking about this issue of balance in vitamin supplementation and how important it is to pay attention to levels. It is possible to do blood tests to check for vitamin levels. It's controversial how well it works to do this. There are normal doctors will order a blood chemistry on you, and it will show you some of your blood levels of certain of your minerals like calcium and magnesium and sodium and potassium and stuff. One of the problems with blood is that it, by the time it shows up on a standard conventional blood test, there's a fair disruption going on for it to be out of range. The other thing is that the range is enormous if you look at it, and it doesn't take into consideration the fact that people are anomalous. So in many cases, it's good to track your own levels and just note if something really changes, if you're getting normal blood tests. There are labs that are specializing in vitamin and mineral tests, and it can be valuable to do this if people are concerned because they're having symptoms. The other thing is, though, that because vitamins are fairly forgiving, if you do some reading about a condition where, for instance, like a pyroluria, where people tend to lose a lot of B6 and zinc, and you're reading about it and you notice that you have a lot of these symptoms, it might be worth trying to take some extra zinc, reducing or removing the copper from your supplement routine, and taking extra B6. Maybe 100 or 200 a day extra, and seeing if you start to feel better. So, as I said, they're a little forgiving. There are virtually no reports of death from vitamin overdoses. In fact, I'm not aware of any reports of death from vitamin overdoses. And this is compared with the number and severity of reports of dangerous overdoses of pharmaceuticals that we see constantly. And this is not just pharmaceuticals given incorrectly, which is another reason for people to die. Now, this includes records on the vitamins here from places like the CDC, Center of Disease Control, American Association of Poison Control, whatever organization controls that, the emergency room and trauma centers. If you follow reports and go to the websites of these organizations, you'll see that there are no figures showing toxic overdoses of vitamins. Now, again, this is my understanding. I have not seen reports like this. And the other thing to remember is that while you can make yourself sick overdosing on a vitamin, except for iron. That's right. George just pointed out to me that when people overdose, I should have said something about iron. Thank you. I love having George here. Iron is an exception. It is a mineral, and it is one of the minerals that, particularly in a supplemental form, is rather really starting to be sort of a toxic metal. If you're insisting on taking supplementation, an iron supplementation, really watch out for any form of iron in a supplement that has the word ferrous, because that's metal. That's metal like the iron that you see in the outside world. Iron is not well absorbed in its metal state. You're much better off getting your iron from heme iron, which is a blood iron. It's unfortunate that this is a hard one for vegetarians, and vegetarians are the ones that tend to be low in iron often, but either from red meat or taking a liquid liver supplement, and liquid liver supplements are usually checked for contaminants, so they're pretty clean. But that's the way to, it's the blood level, the blood iron, that is the source that we will absorb well in. And so iron overdose does cause traceable toxicity and traumas. But again, in the case of people just really misunderstanding the information on vitamins and getting really frisky and overdosing themselves on something and throwing the balance off in their bodies, in the worst case scenario, it may have some effect, maybe on bone density, maybe on mood, maybe on gastrointestinal function, who knows. But inevitably, if you wait long enough and you remove the offending vitamin, the balance will be restored over a period of time. This isn't to say that people shouldn't be respectful of taking supplements. It means that with all the flapping around and fear that's going on in the news about vitamins, and with doctors being very afraid of them because they don't really study them, compared to the other stuff that people are taking, even over-the-counter medications of various sorts, vitamins are forgiving and non-toxic, and it really takes some deliberate kinds of mistakes to cause side effects. Again, compared to pharmaceuticals, you can't even begin to compare the numbers because it's not even comparable. There's like nil to an overwhelming figure, which I don't have in my hands right now. But I've read it before. It's like so frightening, the thousands and thousands and thousands of reports. The other thing to remember is that most pharmaceuticals are based on the active ingredients in a vitamin, mineral, amino acid, or herb. So most of the ailments treated with pharmaceuticals can be treated with a targeted nutrient program. I need to take a short break. This is Lena Berman, Your Own Health and Fitness. We're talking about micronutrients. Please stay with me. I'll be right back. Your molecular structure.
example are a function of design. Those cosmic undulations are steady coming through. Your molecular structure, baby, me and me. Your cellular organization is really something choice. Electromagnetism about to make me lose my voice. Got all my circuits open, my systems reading gold. Your cellular organization, baby, stop the show.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman. And I'm doing a show on micronutrient supplementation. George has just given me some input on some other things that I think are really important to mention. One is, since George is a pharmacist at St. Helena Hospital, he does have an opportunity to see cases where people make mistakes. And he said the only time that he's really seen anything that's really damaging is when people are given... The thing with vitamin A is that... Particularly if someone's liver is at risk, you don't give them high doses of vitamin A because it just takes some extra work for the liver to metabolize and excrete it, to make it excretable. So there are protocols where vitamin A is used in very high doses to treat things like emphysema, for instance. There's a protocol of using 100,000 units of vitamin A for a couple months. The other thing I'm wondering, though, George, is that were these natural source vitamin A, or was this some kind of retin? You don't know. Okay, so we don't know whether but he said that he has seen cases of liver toxicity with ridiculous astronomical doses of vitamin A that went on too long. Again, one would think that this might be a synthetic form of vitamin A, so it's always very important. Vitamin A is, I think, best gotten from a fish oil. Or certainly beta-carotene, although beta-carotene doesn't work for people with thyroid disease or thyroid dysfunction, low thyroid. People don't convert beta-carotene well. In fact, you can tell because their hands get orange when they eat things with beta-carotene because they're not converting it. So vitamin A toxicity, very rarely. The other thing he mentioned, which is very important, we'll bring it up again in next week's show, is B12 and folic acid. There's a very strong relationship between B12 and folic acid. Folic acid is now being used a lot to treat a number of different ailments, a lot of different clotting factors, heart disease issues. It helps with women and their hormonal disruptions and pregnancy problems. If you increase the amount of folic acid, you also need to increase the amount of B12, or you end up with a strange form of anemia from the lack of B12. So those two, again, it's this business of things that affect each other and their other levels. I just want to let you know that if you miss parts of today's show and want to get a copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772 or go to the website yourownhealthandfitness.com. Now, what I said before I left for break is that most pharmaceuticals are based on active ingredients in vitamins and minerals and amino acids and herbs, and most ailments treated with pharmaceuticals can be treated with targeted nutrient program. They will not respond as quickly, necessarily, as a pharmaceutical will. Pharmaceuticals are designed to act much faster. They're more targeted. There are things that are good about that, and there are things that are bad about that. So changing nutrient density in a person is a slower fix, although I've seen remarkable turnarounds and transitions with people in my own practice where we've used vitamins to work on something like hypertension. So some examples, since I mentioned hypertension, is often a problem with balancing minerals. And the main minerals that are deficient in hypertensive very often are magnesium. Remember the vasodilation, opening up the venous blood flow so that they're not clamping down and having high blood pressure. Magnesium, and it is a calcium blocker. You don't have to take a drug to block your calcium, although calcium needs to be there too to relax the arteries. And potassium, which controls the fluid between the cells instead of using a diuretic. This, along with exercise and sometimes some kind of way of dealing with emotional stress, can often reduce, and reducing weight, losing weight. Pulmonary, as I mentioned, the vitamin A is used apparently successfully. There's research that's been done using high doses of vitamin A for a short period of time to reduce some of the pulmonary problems with emphysema. It also works, having it on board in a comfortable range, maybe 10 to 20,000 units a day, making sure there's vitamin D, maybe 1,000 units of vitamin D at least, to balance it for people with asthma. The other thing for asthma and other pulmonary things is magnesium, because it is a dilator. Again, it also opens up the lung function. So that gives you some sense of how minerals and balancing them. For the heart, there was a very brilliant biochemist who I did one show with him, really. And he had he worked with Linus Pauling when he was a very young man. He had a great formula for heart disease, which was CCME, CoQ10, carnitine, magnesium, and vitamin E. Those were the main nutrients that needed to be added into a supplement routine in a robust amount. Dosages will vary according to the size and the health of the person, and I can go over some of that next week as well. Now, since the RDA certainly doesn't take your family history into consideration, and since we're daily bombarded by pollution from hydrocarbons on the freeway to herbicides in the grass at the park, from the mold in school buildings to the formaldehyde in the new clothes at the mall, this is to say nothing of the chemicals in the dentist's office or the x-rays from medical procedures, to the radiation from your cell phone or the endocrine disruptors in your shampoo and plastic water bottle. And hey, what about the pesticides at the gym, the ant spray, or the heavy metals in your fish that you ate for lunch that was so healthy? So, don't ask me why it's necessary to take vitamins. No, we don't get all we need from food, and we never have. It isn't just cooking food and soil depletion. It's stress of every kind, both environmental, emotional, and physical. Modern man is not as relaxed as his hunter-gatherer ancestors were. Even though there may have been stresses, having to look for food and go through famines, our lives are much more stressful, and we don't rest as much as they did, and the pollution on the planet is much worse. That isn't to say that hunter-gatherers wouldn't have lived longer with some micronutrient supplementation. For over 50 years, really smart people have worked long and hard in the field of orthomolecular medicine using micronutrients to treat depression and cancer, and there's a huge body of research to show for it. It's not just the research that conventional media chooses to report on. Some examples of some of the geniuses in orthomolecular medicine, Linus Pauling. Everybody knows about Linus Pauling. He won a Nobel Prize or two. He was not only a peace activist, but he really was the one that broke through and got people to look at vitamin C, and we're still not really seeing enough use of vitamin C to treat pathology. There's the work of Abram Hoffer, who was an MD and a PhD. He still is. He's well into his 80s and still practicing. He began his career in medicine in 1950 after having worked as a research biologist researching vitamins. And he's a pioneer in successfully treating schizophrenia with primarily niacin B3. This was before the omega-3 fatty acids were really seen as valuable, although he certainly talks about using them now and using the omega-3s. But he created incredible breakthroughs with niacin treatment with schizophrenia. No one had been able to treat schizophrenics without medication until then, and still his work is ignored. If you look for him on PubMed, you probably won't find any of his research. All of his research is conventional research. There's nothing fringy about Abram Hoffer. He has several books, a couple of them that are, I think, easily available in print. Two of them from Quarry Health Books, which is a Canadian publisher, but I think they have a website. It's Quarry, spelled Q-U-A-R-R-Y. So you might want to get a piece of paper to write down Dr. Hoffer's books. His name is spelled H-O-F-F-E-R. And one of his books is Dr. Hoffer's ABC of Natural Nutrition for Children. ABCs. It's Dr. Hoffer's ABC of Natural Nutrition for Children. Another book by Quarry Press is Vitamin C and Cancer. And another, which is published by Keats, which is now under the umbrella of some large publishing house, is Putting It All Together, the New Orthomolecular Nutrition. By Abram Hoffer, H-O-F-F-E-R. Some other brilliant people that come to mind that I've interviewed. It isn't easy to get hold of Dr. Stephen Schollenthaler's papers. People are always calling me and asking me how to get his paper, and I do believe his paper is probably on PubMed. Stephen, spelled with a P-H, Stephen Schollenthaler, S-C-H-O-E-N-T-H-A-L-E-R, is from Turlock University, sociologist who for 20 years studied the effects of first just removing junk food and colorings from the diets of prisoners and school children, and then added only a daily multiple vitamin, one he found without colorings. And he saw a marked decrease of violent behavior and a significant increase in IQ. And his research was reported on in the last few years. I saw him speak. And he's being ignored. His research is being ignored. Again, please don't call me and ask me how to get his paper. You'll have to kind of look for it yourself. It's not easy to find. But you can call Turlock University, or you can try PubMed, do a search for Stephen with a P-H, S-T-E-P-H-A-N, Schollenthaler, S-C-H-O-E-N-T-H-A-L-E-R. And the place where I saw Dr. Stephen Schollenthaler was at Dr. Richard Cunyon's Orthomolecular Health Medicine yearly meeting. Another 50 years of practice for Dr. Richard Cunyon, K-U-N-I-N, who is a fairly impressive example on his own of what orthomolecular health medicine can do for people. He's been practicing 50 years, and he looks like he's in his 50s, so I don't know what to tell you about that. He was working first as a psychiatrist and noticed that many of his patients needed nutritional support, and he's in San Francisco, and his orthomolecular health medicine has yearly meetings. They do charge. They're both for professionals and lay people. And additionally, there's a wonderful publication that anybody can get that reports on all of the news in nutritional medicine for each year. It's called Clinical Pearls, and their phone number is 916-483-1085. Clinical Pearls, it's anyone can subscribe. They have a variety of different things available. You can get a book at the end of the year, or you can have monthly newsletters of a Clinical Pearl. It's now one-liners, unfortunately, because it's been hard for them to keep doing this. But you'll get a little one-liner on all the research that's coming out, and it's very valuable to see what's going on. Any of the books of Robert Crayon, C-R-A-Y-H-O-N, although he keeps learning and changing. So his early book, Nutrition Made Simple, has factoids in it that I know that he's now saying different things about, but he's working on a new book. And his Designs for Health Institute is a place for people to go to learn about nutrition. And they're on the website. You can do a search for Designs for Health. Again, you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, health integrationist, and I'm doing a show on micronutrient supplementation this week, mostly just talking about principles to help you figure out what you're doing, protect yourself. So, some specifics. Most vitamins in the stores come from just a handful of pharmaceutical companies. They're called USP. The products, the vitamins are USP vitamins. They're pharmaceutical grade. There's nothing bad about pharmaceutical grade vitamins for most people. There are individuals who are so sick and so sensitive that they have trouble with these vitamins. There is a company called PERQ, and I think it's spelled P-E-R-Q-U-E. Their stuff is fairly expensive. They do seem to have some way of producing vitamins that seems to be better tolerated for really sensitive people. I hear this from really sensitive clients, and I know a couple of nutritionists like Elizabeth Lipsky, whose book Digestive Wellness, another good book in Hawaii, she's in Hawaii, but her book is available anywhere, is using Perk vitamins with really sensitive patients. But for most people, a pharmaceutical-grade vitamin, a hypoallergenic vitamin, is going to be best. Food-based, not necessarily better, and not hypoallergenic. Colloidal minerals often contain toxic metals. There are a few companies who have their colloidal minerals cleaned, for lack of a better term, by companies who can do that. But why do that? They're more expensive. Why not just all the early research on the benefits of minerals? We're using really simple things like calcium carbonate, although it's a bit rough in terms of digestion, and some of the chelated versions of calcium and magnesium, like the citrates, which kind of do for you a step that your body does, are a little easier tolerated in terms of gastrointestinal symptoms, since calcium and magnesium both can speed up your gut. There's no real reason to use expensive vitamins, really, really expensive vitamins. That said, one of the things you may notice is that if you compare dosages and ratios and sources of the vitamins in really cheap vitamins, like something you get at Costco or something, versus some of the stuff in the health food stores, sometimes what you'll see is that there's a better ratio, for instance, between calcium and magnesium, and that the B vitamins are more robust. This is, we're talking multivitamins. So you just end up with kind of a better balance. And there are some vitamins that are better in certain sources than others, and actually it's very hard to get them that way. But for instance, cyanocobalamin, which is the most commonly used form of B12, is actually starting to show up in research as being not so fabulous and certainly not terrific for diabetics in particular. So the methyl, M-E-T-H-Y-L, or hydroxycobalamins are preferred, but they're hard to find in conventional vitamins. Food-based vitamins, I called my old friend, consumer advocate, and has been working in the vitamin industry forever. Well, not forever. He's not that. He's younger than Richard Cunyon. And I talked about vitamins in general, and he said his biggest bugaboo is the food-based vitamins. These are vitamins that make claims of, quote, growing, unquote, vitamins. The claim is that they contain vitamins with a food bond that is supposed to increase absorption. Ed Fry says, on examination, they are using USB vitamins as a base, and they're adding things like yeast or other food sources. There's when he's gone to their websites, there's no scientific reference to support these products on their websites. They just talk about how good they are without showing any research to hold it up. They're not to be confused with a vitamin that has a food base in it, you know, of vitamins that have foods items in it, which maybe could add some cofactors. But since many people have food allergies, why not just take vitamins with food to get your enzymes and cofactors? It's cheaper. And Ed agrees. Fatty vitamins like A, E, and D should always be taken in their natural forms. If they say acetate, or, you know, if it isn't from the A, often it'll say from fish oil. Vitamin E will say tocopherol, natural tocopherols, instead of some kind of acetate. Vitamin D needs to be D3, not D2. And vitamin A, again, we talked about using a beta-carotene or fish oil source. Thyroid people can't convert vitamin A from beta-carotene. So, and I mentioned that if you have a liver disease, if you have Hep C or have had a lot of trouble with hepatitis, high-dose vitamin A is not for you. And I already talked to you a little bit about using high-dose vitamin A for specific ailments. If short-term, I guess that's part of why you would see people coming in with toxic doses of vitamin A, is people probably forget about the short term. They think, wow, this is making me feel better. I think I'll just stay on it. But this is not different than giving somebody a pharmaceutical and saying this is for this amount of time, stop taking it, or actually they don't even say to stop taking it, and then you do see damage or something. So I don't know why, if somebody is prescribing the use of high-dose antioxidant, fat-soluble vitamins for short periods of time, it just has to be very clear to the patient or client what they're doing. And also my own observation is even when we do see an ill effect, it's usually resolved quicker with the removal of the vitamin or the reduction of the dose. It may take a while with the fat soluble to get it out of your system, but it will eventually, I think. Probably get calls from nutritionists for this. But I think I'm right. Essential fatty acids, these are the fats that we only can get from food. Olive oil, which has monounsaturated fat. Well, we make monounsaturated fat and saturated fat in our own bodies all by ourselves. That's what you have around your waist. Well, or some people have around their waist. And the essential fatty acids, like what we find in the fish oils, the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, or gamma-linoleic acid, which is high in certain seed oils, like primrose oil, or to borage oil, too. Although with borage oil, I've noticed that you're more likely to see the oils extracted using hexane, which is, I think, a cleaning solvent. So you should, when you're getting fatty acids, check to make sure that they're naturally extracted, not extracted with solvents. Most people need more of the omega-3s than the 6s because there are so many of the omega-6s in your diet. They're in all the vegetable oils. They're in seeds, in grains, and nuts. But if you are eating a pre-agrarian, a pre-agricultural diet where you're eating lots of vegetables and meat and you're not eating a lot of nuts and grains, you may need to add a little bit of primrose oil in. But the ratio usually is more beneficial to have a fair amount of the omega-3s around. That isn't to say that you shouldn't only take omega-3s in huge, amazing doses and never take any 6s at all. You should get some 6s, maybe some sesame oil in your diet or something. To balance. They all like to be balanced. Too much of the omega-3s, as wonderful as they are, can cause some dryness to the skin, for instance, oddly. But the omega-3s, as you know, are available in a precursor form in some other seed oils, like flax and hemp, and in fish oils. Fish oil doesn't need to be converted. It's already a long-chain omega-3. And the flap around fish oils, the thing I hear all the time, is everybody gets very frightened and they say, oh no, fish oils, contaminants, PCBs and mercury and all this kind of... Well, this is hogwash. I mean, most reputable companies on the shelves are testing for contaminants. Just look at the labels. They'll say, well, of course, this is Ed Fry's suggestion too, always look for labels that say, in quotes, manufactured by, not distributed by. Because if they're just distributing, they could be getting who knows what, not testing. If they're manufactured by, their nose is right up against the axe, so they're going to be very careful. Vitamin, these essential fatty acids are very dose-dependent. One patient with mental illness will need 9,000 milligrams of omega-3 fatty acids to get a response. 8 will not do it. And other people do fine with 3. Now, there are some other small things I'm going to throw out here, although I can talk about them more next week. Alpha lipoic acid and CoQ10 are fabulous antioxidants. CoQ10 potentiates the value of something like L-carnitine, again an amino acid taken between meals. CoQ10 with food, very good for the heart, very good for mitochondrial function. A wonderful antioxidant. Alpha-lipoic acid is absolutely amazing, really terrific for raising glutathione, your antioxidant, your primary detox pathway chemical that you make in your body. Alpha-lipoic acid potentiates and helps you create. It's a wonderful antioxidant. It's fairly new. It also can increase energy in the cells. Another sort of toss-off is MSM. A lot of people are taking orally. Some people tolerate it. Some people get a stomach ache from it for reducing inflammation. You can use it in a powder. You can also open your capsule, mix it with a little bit of arnica gel, A-R-N-I-C-A, arnica gel in a gel, and a little bit of hand cream, and rub it topically right through your skin into the area of inflammation, and it'll stop it. You have a backache, rub the MSM and arnica and hand cream in, and you'll feel better in 15 minutes. Nobody needs the same vitamin program. But everybody can benefit from some vitamins as long as they're taken together. So not everybody can take a multivitamin. And many people who have specific things wrong should take more than a multivitamin. But everybody, if they really don't want to deal with it, can probably benefit from an iron-free multivitamin. Exceptions are people with thyroid disease who have to watch the intake of copper and iodine. Because you're trying, well, I can go over that next week. Although some people can take a very small amount of a kelp-based iodine, but some thyroid patients can't tolerate it. And people who have high copper don't want a bunch of copper in their multivitamin. So at the very least, people can take vitamin C 3 times a day with each meal. Somewhere around 1,000 milligrams is a fairly well-tolerated dose. More may cause gastric symptoms for some people. People who are very sick can tolerate more, but at the very least 1,000 with each meal. Making sure you're getting at least 400 IUs of vitamin E if you're taking a multivitamin. If you're not, supplement. You can take a little more if you need to. And take your essential fatty acids, either in the form of flax if you're not a diabetic or don't have a lot of food allergies, or fish oil, or if you're a vegetarian, you can get some Nutrimins, which is made from kelp. And again, that's one of the reasons for taking the extra E. So at the very least, you add vitamin C and vitamin E to a multi. And there are so many multis out there, and it's kind of, you're going to have to do a little research on your own, but I can talk more about the types of things that people really need more of when they're suffering or have a scary family history of something. We'll take that up next week. Probably next year, too. If we're really lucky, we'll all be here next week, too. Next year. And on and on. Okay, I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information, or if you want a cassette copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can dial my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772, 707-874-2772. For a list of other available shows, go to the website, yourownhealthandfitness.com, Your Own Health and fitness.com. Next week, a continuation, specific nutrient supplementation. We'll look at what's in the literature for treating specific pathologies. I'll try to choose some common ones. The engineer for Your Own Health and Fitness on the Sebastopol side is George Curtis at the Powerhouse Brewery in Sebastopol. Thanks to Johnny Otis and the Powerhouse, and at KPFA, Sally Phillips. I'm Lena Berman. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced live by Free Speech Radio. May it live forever. Remember, being informed will not only protect your health, it will protect your freedom. KPFA 94.1 FM. See you next week.